This is I Ask, They Answer on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
It's a turn for home, and right now it's all Beholder. She hugs the rail and goes for home. Whip is coming out now, though, on Beholder. Put away, tries to hold on. Here's Executive Privilege. Beholder and Executive Privilege coming through the stretch together. Beholder and Garrett Gomez. Executive Privilege and Rafael Viano. They're starting to shift ground. It's Beholder on the inside holding on. Beholder's going to go all the way. And Beholder and Garrett Gomez have won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile finish. Executive Privilege shifted her ground, finished up second, and then came Dreaming of Julia in third.
Well, who could have guessed what was still to come after that brilliant victory by Beholder, the first of her three Breeders' Cup wins. That came in 2012. Trevor Denman had the call. She, along with Azari and Hurricane Birdie, are celebrated with stakes named in their honor this afternoon. If Dale and Tim could bring back any filly or mare of their choosing, which would they like to watch race again this year? Plus, is Rusty Arnold right or wrong in his criticism of Heisa? And which Derby points race winner did it best last weekend? All of those topics and much, much more are straight ahead on this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf rider Tim Wilkin. And it's all presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program in the College of Business. And it all starts just 30 seconds from right now.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 35 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Okay, guys, last week we debuted a new segment here on the program, and we debated which legendary horses and jockeys did it best when reaching career milestones. This morning, we begin the show by looking back on last weekend's four Kentucky Derby points races, and you guys will once again get to share your thoughts on who did it best.
Doorknock is too much horse. Doorknock clear with a 16th to go. The Fountain of Youth Stakes goes to Doorknock.
It's Deterministic who's in front, is up by a length and a half. Just a touch into second. Deterministic wins the Gotham.
Here comes Encino. Encino wins the John Battaglia Memorial.
Wind me up, Imagination, in a DK Horse San Felipe thriller. Photo finish, Imagination, and Wind me up.
Four horses with their sights set on the Triple Crown Trail. Tim Wilkin, who did it best last weekend?
Well, I'm going to eliminate the ones that didn't. I'm going to start in California. Because Bob Baffert ran 1-2, his horses can't run in the Derby, so that's out. Not using that one at all. Go to the Fountain of Youth, Doorknock. He won the Fountain of Youth. He did what he had to do. The race lost a lot of its luster with Locke being scratched, Speakeasy, Victory Avenue. So he basically did, you know, he was supposed to win. It would have been a big story if he lost. He didn't do it flashy. He didn't do anything outstanding. He just won the race. So I'm not using him. And I think we were talking about the John Battaglia too, with Encino. I wasn't that impressed with that because I haven't been impressed with Battaglia as a Derby prep, even though Rich Strike came out of that. So I'm going to say the Gotham with Deterministic. It was only his second career start after broke his maiden at Saratoga last summer. He had a setback. He was out the rest of his two-year-old year. Christophe Clement has never had a horse in the Kentucky Derby. Looks like this one is on the path to get there. You know, and only his second career start to win a Derby prep. That was pretty impressive to me. So I'm saying Deterministic did it best last weekend.
No doubt. Nothing. No knocks on the rest of the horses. Like you say, the Fountain Youth just fell apart. Doorknock did what he had to do, what he was supposed to do. He went on one. Hopefully we'll see an even stronger race out of him next time out. But Gotham winner was that's ultra impressive training job, ultra impressive horse. First of all, you have to have a horse that can do that, come off of that long of a layoff and only one start, and win a prestigious race like that first race back and the way he did it. I thought that was just all-around good effort from everybody, horse, trainer, jockey, owner, everybody.
But just be warned that I know the Gotham has had Derby winners in the past, but last 48 runners that come out of Gotham, none of them have won the Derby. But those records are made to be snapped, right?
They always are. It seems like every year something gets changed around, and Big Red came out of there. That's the last one I know of.
And this horse, this deterministic, he, you know, he's Vinny Viola, the St. Elias Stables. That's the main owner part of the group, and you know, it'd be good to have get him and Christoph to Churchill be in that race. So, yeah.
Yeah, Vinny's a great guy in the game, and plus he owns a stallion. He raced him and campaigned him, still owns a big piece of him at Lane's End. So, all around
Liam's map,
for everybody.
Right?
And yep. Liam's map. And when guys like Vinny win, the game wins.
Yeah.
This is a year where, guys, this is a year where the three-year-old division seems to lack star power. Nobody has really come to the front and said, hey, I'm the one to beat on the first Saturday in May. Do you view Deterministic as being that horse, or is he just another one in the mix at this point?
In my opinion, he's just one in the mix, but he's one the most likely of the ones I've seen that are eligible for the Derby to step up and become the star power. I think we got star power, but they're all in Babbage Barn.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in Deterministic, let's see what he does, if he goes around two turns on it. He looks like he has a pretty high ceiling. But again, there's no of the horses that are eligible to run in the Kentucky Derby, I don't see anyone that's scaring anybody else away.
Timmy, what do you think you'd do next with him if you're Christoph?
I think you go to the wood, don't you?
Yeah, that's a possibility, but there's a lot of options out there.
I mean, I don't know if they
only have three career starts in your life going into the Kentucky Derby, and that's a pretty uphill battle. If you think about it, I know that they're behind the eight ball. They took a little chip out of him or something somewhere, and when he was two, and they've been catching up ever since. But
I can't imagine he'd run twice before the Derby.
No, you wouldn't think so. But then, can you bet on a horse only running three times in his life going into the Derby? Like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the last 34 horses that have gone in to use the Derby as their third prep were over 34.
But again, if this horse takes another step up, maybe he's going to be that good to run against this bunch of three-year-olds. Because again, we haven't seen anything that's scaring anybody off.
No, you're right.
Well, 8 weeks until the Kentucky Derby. The decision that comes next for Deterministic and Dornock and Sino, all those horses we're talking about, it better be the right decision next if they want to get to the first Saturday in May and be a legitimate contender on that day. All right, guys, topic number two. Today we are paying tribute to a few of the top distaffers in our game with the Azari Stakes at Oaklawn and the Beholder Mile at Santa Anita. You also have the Hurricane Birdie at Gulfstream. We have spent plenty of time over the past couple of years on this show talking about the greatest fillies and mares in racing history. But if you guys could bring back just three horses to watch, three fillies and mares to watch, and see them compete again this year, which three are you going to choose? Dale, your three favorite fillies to watch.
Well, one I never saw run, just videos, and that'd be Ruffian. Everybody talks about the great Ruffian, and Central Vasquez is a good friend of mine, and he said he never got to the bottom of her. And he had the option of who to ride in the match race, and he picked her to ride. I think I'd love to see her. And then I'd like to see Zenyatta back and Rachel. Those, I think, are two that were in my time that are as good as any that ever ran.
Yeah. I looked at that. Of course, those are the greats. You throw the names like the three that Dale said and, put in names like Winning Colors, Azari, Genuine Risk. Yeah, you'd love to see those three. But I went off the reservation a little bit for the fillies at the mares that I'd like to see back. They're not in the echelon of the ones we just mentioned. But, I'd start out. I'd love to see Rags to Riches run again. She made her claim to fame when she won the Belmont, beating Curlin in 2007. She won 5 of 7 career starts, and including the Kentucky Oaks. And an injury ended her career early. I still think she belongs in the Hall of Fame. I'd love to see her run again. And, you know, because one of these races that we talked about, Hurricane Birdie, the sprint, I'd like to see Groupie Doll run again. She was an outstanding sprinter, two-time Eclipse winner. I'd like to see her. And I always had a special affinity for Swiss Skydiver. Kenny McPeak's filly that won the Preakness. And, you know, I got to hang out with her a lot when the one summer up there at Saratoga, and she was a sweetheart to be around. So I'd like, and she could run. So I'd like to see those three: Rags, Groupie Doll, and Swiss Skydiver.
Yeah, I'm with Dale on Ruffian. I obviously never got an opportunity to see her compete. I think that would be really fun to bring her back and kind of go back in time with her. There was a filly, Timmy, you might remember this. You remember the filly Capote Bell that used to be a really good sprinter up there in New York?
Yeah, I do. I remember that one.
Yeah, I enjoyed Capote Bell. I liked watching her run. We can talk about this all day.
I tell you one more.
Yeah, excellent meeting. How about excellent meeting?
Well, what about Landa Luce? Yeah. One of the all-time great two-year-old fillies that went and saw her demise way too early, that Wayne Lucas still says to this day is one of the best horses he was ever around.
Two others that I like to remember: Songbird was phenomenal, and Unique Bella, I thought, was a very interesting, good, hard-knocking filly. There's just so many of them.
Well, it's a conversation we could have on and on and on, talking about our favorite fillies and mares that we'd like to see run again. Time now to say hello to our good friend Nick Zito. And Dale and Tim get to tell me if the following statement is right or wrong.
Yeah, right or wrong. Am I right? What do you think? Right or wrong?
All right, gentlemen. On Thursday, the National HBPA distributed an open letter to horsemen written by trainer Rusty Arnold. Rusty took umbrage with HISA and the organization's enforcement arm, the Horse Racing Integrity and Welfare Unit, after he received a 7-day suspension for a test that came back positive for tramadol on a 2-year-old filly in his barn. There are a multitude of issues brought up in this letter, and Rusty joined me in the first hour of today's show. He reiterated what he pointed out in the letter, that he is not anti-HISA, but the organization and its CEO, Lisa Lazarus, are living in a fantasy world, as he put it, when it comes to keeping horses clear of environmental contamination. Rusty says HISA has become a dictatorship, and they need to make horsemen a partner of the organization, not an enemy. Dale, you're a fellow trainer. I'll come to you first after we hear from Nick Zito. Is Rusty Arnold right or wrong?
What do you think? Right or wrong?
He's 100% right. It's ridiculous what's going on, and I sit on one of the advisory boards. It's like beating your head against the wall sometimes. If people don't seem to understand how much contaminant is in the world and how sensitive testing is. You're getting down to nanograms and picograms. And the worst part of the whole thing is they basically are telling people, you investigate and clear yourself and we'll look at it differently. Instead of sending a team of investigators in and finding out what's really happened, people who know how to investigate and figure out these things. I'm like Rusty. It's here. We got to live by the rules, but we need to work really hard at trying to make them start doing it right. It is. It's a fantasy land. They want to put up signs and tell them grooms and stuff to wash their hands. If somebody's using meth, you think they're going to read a sign about washing their hands and they're worried about hygiene? It's a problem. We got to fix it. There's too many contamination, too many innocent people getting away, and they're catching minnows and sharks are swimming.
Dale, Rusty referred to it as gotcha chemistry that's tripping up a lot of trainers and affecting so many people's lives, not just the trainers, but the owners and the breeders who are seeking breeders' awards from these horses that are being disqualified and all of those types of things. Do you agree? Is it gotcha chemistry right now with HISA?
It is right now. It is right now. Whoever, it's not Lisa because it's not her response. It's not, I mean, she's there to make sure that everything's enacted, but it's whoever these lawyers are behind the scenes that are deciding on what levels we should test things to and how. There is no such thing as zero in anybody. Human, you could probably find 100 drugs in a human thinks they're as clean as can be if you went ahead and tested down to picograms. It's just a mess and needs to be fixed. It needs to be fixed quickly. You're ruining people's livelihoods.
Tim?
You know, it's I sympathize greatly with Rusty Arnold. I mean, he's just, he is a solid, solid horseman and always has been. And I'm sure he's banging his head against the wall about this because what it's just, I'm doing some math, and I'm bad at math. I was looking at this thing, that tramadol, the painkiller they found in the horse Figgy that was the horse in question for Rusty. It was 3 nanograms, and a nanogram is a billionth of a gram. I mean, that is, seems like it would be like a piece of sand or something to me. And it's, there's never going to be any, these are animals. It's not, these animals go and do all kinds of stuff, man. They put things in their system, you know, with everything they eat and all of that. There's going to be contamination. And I'm sure Heisen realizes that. They just got to, I think everything has to be tweaked a little bit. Because it's going to, if it stays the way it is, every trainer in the world's going to have problems like Rusty has. And, you know, with Heisa being, I mean, the eye on racing, a trainer would have to be out of his freaking mind to knowingly want to put any kind of illegal substance into a horse. I feel for these guys because you can't be in the stall of every horse 24/7.
Dale, can Heisa still be the answer for this game going forward?
Yeah, they can be, but I still don't know what question we're trying to answer. But they got to get their act together and get it together quick. I mean, it's getting extremely frustrating. I'm on the inside of it all, and it's just ridiculous. It's government bureaucracy. That's what we're fighting.
Now, well, hopefully this gets rectified sooner rather than later, because these stories are becoming all too commonplace in the world of thoroughbred racing, and that's not good for anybody involved in this industry. We're going to bring back that segment again with Nick Zito next Saturday morning, Right or Wrong. Dale and Tim will tell me if next week's topics are right or wrong, but I have one more to get to here this week, guys. This is kind of fun. Happy anniversary to Triple Crown winner Seattle Slew, because it was on this day 47 years ago that he made his triumphant 3-year-old debut at Hialeah Park. He won a 7-furlong race. He did it in 1:20 3/5 that broke the track record that day. As you know, Seattle Slew would go on to sweep the Triple Crown with that unblemished 9-for-9 record before finally tasting defeat in the Swap Stakes at Hollywood Park, finishing 4th. People will forget this, 16 lengths behind J.O. Tobin and jockey Bill Shoemaker. So I thought it would be fun this morning for each of you to spend a few minutes sharing your favorite Seattle Slew stories in remembrance of the great Triple Crown winner. Tim, you want it first?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't covering racing then. I was in college, but I knew of Seattle Slew, and it is, as I got into the game, I got to know Billy Turner, who was like myself from Rochester, New York. And you know, just the stories that he would tell about Seattle Slew, you know, training him. And Billy was just a gentleman of a guy. He always reminded me of the actor Jimmy Stewart, just the way he conducted himself. He just had that kind of like, aw shucks mentality. And he told great stories about Seattle Slew, you know, like his demeanor around the barn, how he was, you know, he wasn't a horse that wanted to be petted for, and he didn't want to have, you know, but he was easy enough for him to deal with. But, you know, just listening to Billy's stories, and I remember in 2015 when American Pharoah was going for the Triple Crown, and Billy Turner went into Rockefeller Center where they had the draw that year. And he and Bob Baffert were posing for pictures because Bob was a trainer of Pharoah. And the stories that those two shared, it was just a, he was just a cool guy to be around. Billy was, and you know, the stories that he told about, you know, training the great Slew, it kind of like puts you back there, like you were almost there. I mean, he was a good storyteller, and you know, he was. I always liked Billy, and obviously Seattle Slew was just a phenomenal animal. It seems to me though that back in the 70s when he won his Triple Crown, I mean, it was Secretary in 73. Slew in 77, and then Affirmed in 78. It was like everyone expected it to happen every year. But Seattle Slew, make no doubt about it, man. He was a phenomenal racehorse.
I could go on and on all through the whole show talking about Seattle Slew. And that Rockefeller Center trip you're talking about, Timmy, Billy, I was lucky enough that Billy Turner rode in a limousine with me from Belmont Park to the to Rockefeller Center. So I picked his brain the whole trip. I had him telling stories the whole way there and the whole way back. First of all, Seattle Slew is probably my favorite horse of all time as a spectator. He was the first Derby I ever went to when I was 9 years old. Haven't missed one since. But my favorite story about him is when I heard he was sick, I called the farm and I told him that he was a special horse to me. Could I come over and see him? And they got him already. He had a private showing, Seattle Slew, and I went up to pet him on the shoulder, and he bit me and grabbed my shoulder and shook me. So I've petted three Triple Crown winners and been bit by one in my life, but Seattle Slew's still at the top of the game. But we should do a whole show just remembering Seattle Slew.
Yeah, maybe we will. I found an article that was written in Sports Illustrated after Seattle Slew was beaten on the West Coast there at Santa Anita by J.O. Tobin, and it was written by the late William Leggett. And here was the headline. He said, Slew blew West Test. And I thought that was brilliant. And then he went on to say the unbeaten Triple Crown winner flew all the way to Hollywood to pick up a couple hundred thou, but this colt named J.O. Tobin upstaged him by a Sacco 16 lengths.
Now, that's all true, but I want to defend Slew a little bit. Didn't he come down with a major fever after that and was really sick and almost died? Was that the time that he got very sick after the race and he was sick when he ran and they didn't realize it?
I don't know about that.
Maybe.
I didn't find that in the article. I think that's the rest of the story. That's the Paul Harvey on that race at J.O. Tobin. They could line him up every day, and he wasn't going to beat the Slew. He was a nice horse, no knocking him. But the Slew on his best day wasn't going to get beat by J.O. Tobin.
Yeah, he said the crowd was chanting Slew, Slew, Slew in the post parade, and then after the race when J.O. Tobin came back, the cheers changed to Shoe, Shoe, Shoe for Shoemaker.
That's pretty good.
Well, that's something you'd see in New York.
Yeah, great.
Fair weather
stuff. And by the way, Billy Turner Jr. took time to sit down with me for a full hour visit in 2015 for our trainer talk show at Belmont Park. Timmy, you alluded to the fact American Pharoah was going for the Triple Crown. It was one of the really cool moments I've ever had on radio to visit with him. And you described him as a gentleman, and that is 100% accurate.
Yeah, he really was.
Put him in the Hall of Fame. Put him in the Hall of Fame.
Dale, listen, we've got to get to our final point of the week, but before we do, we're just about out of time. Before we do, we did have a listener write into the show with a question specifically for you. He said he's having trouble finding information on a horse named Stretch Ride, and he wants to know if you can give him any insight into that horse.
Yeah, he came down to Florida, and he just wasn't striding out real good, so we ran some tests on him. He came up with some mild bone bruising. He'd get him 60 days off on the farm. He'll be back for the summer. Look for him to win the Travers.
We appreciate all the emails we get from listeners here for I Ask, They Answer, and keep them coming. Anything you want Dale and Tim to talk about, send me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net, and we'll get it worked into future shows. It is that time where we get to our final point of the week. Timmy, why don't you take it away first, my friend?
Well, they had the governor's office in New York had they released some high-resolution renderings of new Belmont Park pictures of what it's going to look like, and there was a lot of concern because of and Dale knows what I'm talking about, and you probably do too, Mike, the big Japanese white pine that always stood in the paddock at Belmont. A lot of people were concerned, is that tree still going to be around? It is, but it's going to have a new spot. It's going to be outside the paddock and not inside the paddock. Now I'm just hoping that the Secretariat statue finds a home somewhere in the new Belmont Park, because the place looks like it's going to be phenomenal, but they got to keep some of the past.
Very true, very true. I just want to say happy birthday to my good friend Debbie Finley, co-owner of West Point Thoroughbreds. Today's her birthday, the milestone birthday. I think she's 30 again. So happy birthday, Debbie.
Happy birthday, Debbie.
Yeah, happy birthday, Debbie. Great name for a horse, by the way. Happy birthday, Debbie.
Yes, it is.
Terry Finley, take note.
Guys, listen, appreciate it. We're going to do it all over again next Saturday morning, and we'll remind listeners if they have a topic they want to hear you discuss, they can simply email the show. We'll get it worked in for them. Dale, Tim, enjoy the weekend, guys.
Thanks, fellas.
You too,
Mike.
See you next Saturday.
See you later.
I Ask, They Answer is presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program and the College of Business. I'm back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, where racing comes to talk.